大阪ホリデー。
ワン、ツー、スリー、ファイブ。
Listeners, well, you asked for it, and we got it. An interview with Dr. Fritz Panikok, president of Athabasca University. We talked to him about what a university president does, some of the more memorable things he's done, and also about some of the challenges the university faces and what students can do to help. We also hear from Dr. P about the role of social media in education and what kind of things the university is working on. So tonight, we bring you episode 6 of the Unofficial Landing Podcast. Episode 6, All Hail to the Chief.
So if you don't mind, I guess we could get started?
Yeah, sounds good. Okay.
All right. So for the podcast, we're interviewing Dr. Panikok, who is president of Athabasca University. And I think one of the first things that we wanted to ask was, what does a typical day look like for a university president?
Well, I would like to say there really isn't one. generally, my day gets booked up about 6 months in advance, and I am moved from meeting to meeting basically on the hour. But I can give you some idea of the topics that are covered. It's... About 20% of my time is spent on governance issues, that is, with government and or the board. About another, I'd say 30% is spent on working with fund development and community relations building. So that's where about 50%. Then I'd say another 20% is spent on staff relations and working with people and resolving issues and mediating issues. That's the balance. And then the balance is spent on giving speeches and working at international bodies and more fundraising. So it's a job that's very external in its focus. It's not, some people think it's very, very internal, but it really isn't. What I always like in the role of a university president too is sort of like being a mayor of a large community, is that everybody has a vote and you're just one of many. You have, I'll admit, lots of influence, but in a collegial environment it's group governance.
So you really run off your feet then, going back and forth from all these meetings.
Yes, and some of them are in Edmonton, and some of them are in Athabasca, and some of them are in Calgary, and some of them are in Ottawa, and some of them are in Europe. And
so quite literally off your feet then.
yes. Sometimes I'm in the sky.
Good heavens. Do you think most of the time in Athabasca, or you're just here, there, and everywhere?
I'd say about altogether in a year, I'd probably spend about two-thirds of my time in Athabasca. Maybe, to be honest, it's probably closer to 50%.
Wow. So I guess one of the other questions I was going to ask was, what the strangest thing or the most unusual thing you've done in your tenure as president?
Oh, there's been many, many really strange and unusual things. One is working to get some contacts for our students in Mozambique in the Heritage Program. I went there for a visit, and I was taken to this remote World Heritage Site. And the archaeologist who had dug the site, she was there, and she was singing at the top of her voice. And I thought, this must be some African ritual, and, I got to figure out to be respectful what's going on. And someone said, no, there's just very, very venomous snakes around. And she believes singing, and what she did when she was digging it, just keeps these venomous snakes at bay. And I thought, oh, dear, gulp. So that's one. I didn't expect it, but it's interesting. And another was about 2 weeks after I started, I got an email from a student, a really respectful email, saying he was upset about something the university had done, said, I am going to occupy your office. And I thought, oh, dear. But he just sent an email every morning saying, it's not been resolved. Consider your office virtually occupied. And he sent me an email every morning for about a week or two, and then when it was resolved, he said, "Thank you very much. I am now not going to virtually occupy your office anymore."
I guess you don't really have to worry so much about sit-ins.
Well, I thought it was very respectful, and it had the same impact, because every morning you were reminded that
there it was
still there, and it hadn't been resolved. So I thought, well, good on him. But I thought that was very imaginative.
Do you find that most of your contact with Athabasca students, and it sounds like you spend most of your time with governmental relations and university affairs, but do you find that most of your contact that you have with students is by email or phone? Do you get to meet a lot of them?
I get to meet a lot of students. What we've started to invite students to the alumni events, so I really, really like the alumni events, both because you get past students and present students, but you also then get alumni mentoring today's students. So I really find that fascinating. I also have, I'm just looking at some numbers today, I have about, I teach three sections of two courses, and I have about 74 students at any one time. That
you're teaching as well?
Yeah, I'm teaching as well, yeah. So I really enjoy that, and it's my favorite subject, so I have to do it, otherwise I go crazy.
So it's either that or we find you singing at the top of your lungs.
Yeah, that's right.
So since you're teaching students, I wonder, and also from your position as president, what kind of issues do you think Athabasca students in particular should be making themselves aware of?
Well, I think the number one issue that students should worry about is the state and the future of post-secondary education in Canada. It's post-secondary education is critical in the knowledge economy. And for the last 3 years, universities have had a 0% increase in their government grants and a limit by inflation, obviously, on tuition. So our cost of running a university increases on average about 5 to 6% per year, and we've had 0% for 3 years with a minimal tuition increase. You won't think it's minimal, but for us, 1 to 2% is pretty minimal. So what will happen if you just do some quick math? You'll say, well, gee, in 3 years you'll have lost 20% of your purchasing power. So that's very, 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 very serious, because once you start doing that, then you start impacting quality. And I think we're almost to the point where any further slices off the top will be very dangerous. So I think students have to be part of the agitation. In fact, students will be listened to, whereas universities might not. So there's going to be, I think, other issues that students should be aware of. One's funding, too, is most of our students are the workers of today, and they see trends in job markets as well, and they see trends in learning and trends in interests. And I think that students should be very aware, be very self-aware and aware of everything that's going on around them, and making sure that what is communicated to us is a sense of what is really going on in their lives and their workplaces that we should react to. Because we get, probably the number one request we get from students is, we want an education degree online. Mm-hmm. And the number two request we get from students is, we want a law degree online. And the number three request we're getting, we've got one, we're nearly finished the architecture program. That was a huge one. But also some students really want us to start doing what we can in engineering, which is complex but not impossible. So I think we do hear students, but we don't control all the mechanisms. The mechanisms are complex, that all governed by basically the province. That's probably where some of the pressure points are.
So students can contact members of the
their
provincial MLAs
to me, everyone says, well, they should contact the minister, saying, well, that's important because he matters a lot, but they're MLAs, because government people say many people tell me, well, it's not democratic. And I'd say, well, actually it is. My experience has is if enough students contact an MLA on an issue, they really pay attention. And 100 students on a single issue, let's say one of the Edmonton MLAs got 100 letters, and we do have more than 100 students in every riding, that would make an incredible impact because they took the time and the passion and the interest to write. And having worked in government much of my life, I know that 100 letters is considered very, very serious business.
And that's, I think, something that we've heard from our Grad Student Association and the Undergraduate Students Union at Athabasca, that the funding and cost of education has been a big concern from them. So sounds like students should be throwing their support behind their student government to try and continue lobby effort.
Yeah, being involved in student government is really important. And some of the things that the student leaders have done, both at a provincial level and at an institutional level, and by working together, really, really has made a difference.
And you mentioned briefly engineering and architecture coming online. Are those things that are on the horizon for Athabasca?
Well, architecture is. Engineering will take 5, 6, 7, 8 years to complete discussions because it's very complex. It involves other universities, professional bodies, practitioners, people being convinced that you could actually teach it online, because there's still people who believe, like when I say we are one of the largest, if not the largest, producer of nurses in Canada, you know what's going through their head immediately. And I always say, and yes, they all do clinical placements, and yes, they've got the same bedside practice and hours that other people do, as other students do as well. So is it possible to do things that require practicums, courses that require practicums? Of course it is. It just requires people to get their heads around it.
Are there hints that you can give us about new and exciting things over the next year that students can look forward to?
Well, there's lots of really exciting things, I believe. We are, in fact, investigating the possibility of a law degree. We got money from the Alberta Law Foundation to do that. So this is not a dream. It's a dream with a little bit of money. And then we have the new university strategic plan, which the students were involved in, everyone's involved in creating. So that maps out the future for the next 5 to 6 years. But there's always new things. The University Press is always coming up with new and exciting books. We're also part of an international open educational resource movement, which will see us harvesting resources, and there are millions of them, the very best for use in AU courses. We are very active internationally and in Africa and in India, and a lot of people would like our students to go on exchanges. And what we got to figure out is how can a student who is working, because many of our students are working, how can we make sure that they have the opportunity where it's suitable to be internationalized. So we're really working hard on that as well. So
I think
there's lots of interesting and exciting things that can be done, because I know that some students, they are working and they got to balance their learning life and their work life. But I also know that sometimes one can make an arrangement with the employer and saying, gee, if I can go for 2 weeks abroad and learn about something that's happening in Africa, India, that applies to work here, they may actually be supportive. It's going to be more difficult, but I think it could be quite exciting for us.
I am all for trips to Mozambique. Not so much for snakes, but perhaps the trip
itself. And it's it's one of the poorest countries in the world, but the passion of the students there for learning and the connections that our students in Mozambique now felt with Canada, that trip of theirs here has transformed their lives. And I think if it happened the other way around, whoever went would find their lives transformed as well.
Switching gears a little bit, as you probably know, this podcast, the Unofficial Landing Podcast, is a community-based fan podcast that had its origins in an off-the-cuff discussion about the landing itself, the Athabasca landing, and this this idea that we should work to build a sense of community between students mm-hmm. and faculty and staff. So we're wondering, have you had much of an opportunity to use the landing?
I'm certainly aware of the landing, and I've working through the logistics of how a president might use social media in a landing when anything I say is given inappropriate weight.
that must be really difficult. Do you have to weigh everything that you say carefully?
Because there's also in some university presidents who started to use social media have mm-hmm. discovered quite quickly that everything they say can be subject to litigation, not so much in Canada, but in the United States.
Uh-huh.
So then any people who would have, let's say, a site on the landing, and I wouldn't call it a blog, but let's mm-hmm. say start to say and just generally muse about this issue or that issue, then you start getting lawyers, media people, mm-hmm. governments, everyone watching what you're saying. So it's no longer an innocent discussion on musings, which have no more weight than anyone else's musings, but everyone sees them as having more weight. So what I found is that unless you can respond to all of the people that respond to you, then you're not really playing the social media game right.
Mm-hmm.
And many university presidents, what they have done after starting is offloaded it to a social media specialist. And I'd say I refuse to do that. I will do my own stuff, but I'll take my own caution and care. So one of my real beliefs is I should do no damage. I should be very careful never to leave a place or a conversation in a worse state than when I started it, which is very difficult to do. So people can say, and you may well say as well, that you're being overly cautious.
Mm-hmm.
But when you've got the responsibility for 40,000 students and 1,200 staff and the financial viability of an institution, you owe it to the institution somewhat careful.
And diligent, too, it sounds like.
And extremely diligent. So if I make mm-hmm. a comment about another country or another institution or anything or a particular, let's say, method of teaching, there will be people who take the entire opposite side. And I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is good for discussion. But I can't carry on those conversations given the time I have and given the fact that people expect me to come up with definitive answers for which, there are no definitive answers in an academic world. Everything's subject
mm-hmm.
to debate, discussion, nuance, which I think is fantastic. So I just realized that I have to be careful and prudent, not harm students, not harm faculty relations, not harm the institution. And occasionally I'm not above gingering things up, but you have to be very, very careful as well.
Well, we're all friendly here on the
podcast.
Well,
students, I would say for students, as many students know, if you say something that you regret an hour later, it will be if you're on Twitter and on Facebook and on the landing, it will have been replicated and around the globe in short order.
Mm-hmm. And then it's to your chagrin, stuck there forever.
You can't undo what you do. And you'll be remembered even 30 years from now. Oh, you're the person that is following. Yeah.
Oh, no. Now I'm thinking about my Twitter feed.
But I don't think people should be overly cautious because, what's the value of social media if you're going to be so cautious that it prevents open and careful discussion?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the past when you had a conversation in the room, yes, it may have been repeated to four or five people in a normal social setting. You'd tell your friends it was interesting. But the moment you go on Facebook or Second Life or any of these, all of a sudden you've got millions of people watching what you said. So your impact is no longer as innocent as it ever was.
So really a question of balance then.
It's a question of balance, and it's also a question when you use social media, it's putting limits on it. You can determine who will be part of your discussion network, But what you can't determine if you're talking to 30 people that your conversation won't be replicated elsewhere. Mm. You can't necessarily guarantee that.
And you were saying that social media gives you the chance to have careful and nuanced debate. Do you see that as something that is valuable, that social media is valuable for distance-based education and institutions?
I think, yeah, absolutely critical. And I think the future will involve social media. It's just we've got to sit down and think it through very, very carefully how we use it and maximize its potential.
So you see it slowly being folded into the distance education experience over time?
Oh, I think it'll be quickly folded in. Between, I think, within the next 3 to 4 years, you may say that's slow, I'd say that's fast. You will see social media being increasingly used in classrooms, and I can see it having incredible value. Peer-to-peer education, which is what social media can allow, can be huge. But we've got to think it through really, really carefully. And the reason I argue that is students pay a pretty hefty tuition fee, and we have an obligation to not do any damage, and if we change a course, to make sure that it's better than its previous iteration. And I think we generally do that. So if somebody says, oh, just jump in and do it tomorrow morning, I'd say, well, that's okay, but have you thought about it really, really carefully to make sure that the learning experience is better than the one that's being abandoned, or that this addition really does add real value? I think it does, but it requires a lot of careful thinking.
Yeah, that's a side of it I suppose I hadn't thought about before.
Well,
okay.
I think it's social media. If you can quite quickly use social media to set up study groups, for example. You could use it to set up peer-to-peer learning. You could use it aggressively in language learning. You could use it in, I can see being used, political science. Like I can see so much of this stuff being used, but I always say, okay, now, when you look at the curriculum and the learning outcomes, what are the learning outcomes that you desire? But that means that we have some pretty good faculty who are very good, and through the Techree Institute, who will be thinking exactly how to make this stuff work. And that's what the landing was all about, and Terry Anderson and his group have done a wonderful job of pulling something together.
And oh, definitely.
Yeah, now we've got to figure out, okay, how can we maximize its potential? How can we encourage people to use it? Because not everyone is as excited about this sort of thing as I might be. Some people are more cautious, and that's what makes a university. You got to have the cautious and the adventurous, and then you end up having balance.
Very much so. If you had a piece of advice to an Athabasca student, if you could impart one piece of advice to them, what would it be?
To an Athabasca University student?
Yes.
My advice to them is, one, have a dream and follow that dream. Escape the bounds of tradition and normal expectations and go for the gold, as I say.
Dr. P, will you shake my hand when I cross the stage next year?
You'll make it.
I hope so. Dr. Panicott, thank you so much for agreeing to do this interview. It sounds like you have many, many busy days every day. And I appreciate taking the time, especially in the evening. Thank you.
No, anything students want is critical. Anyway, thank you for taking time to spend with me.
That's all the time we have tonight. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to Dr. Fritz Panicock for agreeing to the interview, and to Gil Brennan from the Office of the President, who helped to make it all happen. And to you, the listeners, because this podcast is for you, and often it's about you. Music this evening was by Jackie and the Cedrics, playing Osaka Holiday, available from the Free Music Archive, freemusicarchive.org. Like we say every time, the Unofficial Landing Podcast is not officially affiliated with Athabasca University. Views and opinions are our own. It might be just like venomous snakes and zombies.
And someone said, no, there's just very, very venomous snakes around.
Or maybe just snakes. Tune in next time when we bring you more stories from the landing. Good night.